This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to Breaking Bread. This is the show where we explore food through culture, conversations, and a whole lot of curiosity. I'm your host, Lo Yi Jun, a food writer and recipe developer from the Jun & Tonic blog. Every week on this show, we dive deep into an aspect of food culture in Malaysia, and I bring in some food friends and experts to talk about it. Now, we often use the term multicultural to describe Malaysia. We have many cultures, after all, with the three big races, Malay, Chinese, and Indian, making up the bulk of our population. And the same can be said for our food. We've got Malay warungs, Chinese kopitiams, and Indian curry houses dotted throughout the country. But what I really find most interesting is when these cultures collide and actually give birth to new dishes and cooking techniques and sometimes entirely new cuisines. So today, we're going to explore one such cross-cultural cuisine. While Nyonya or Peranakan food might be the most well-known cross-cultural cuisine in Malaysia, there's another lesser-known cuisine that too came out of the clash of cultures in the Malaysian state of Malacca. I am talking about Kristang cuisine. The Kristang people and their cooking draws heavy influence from the Portuguese, who conquered and occupied Malacca back in the 16th century. So their food, while similar to the more well-known Chinese-flecked Peranakan cuisine, Kristang food has more Eurasian spunk and gumption to it, making it somewhat familiar to the Malaysian palate, but also super refreshing and stimulating at the same time, as you'll soon find out. So today we're in for a treat because we have one of the biggest proponents of Kristang food, Melba Nunes, in the studio with us today. She's a chef, restaurateur, cookbook author, and a major, major figure in the world of Kristang cuisine. Welcome on the show today, Melba.
Thank you, Jun. It's nice to be here. Yeah.
So just now you're speaking, and clearly I had like a misinformation about what Kristang food really is. So what is Kristang food really?
Okay. First of all, let me tell you where I was born, right?
Okay.
Okay, I was born in Malacca, and I am of Portuguese and Dutch descent. All right. So in Malacca, we have got the Kristang community, the people we call Jenti Kristang in my Creole, which is Papia Kristang, a kind of language which has been mixed and is now called a Creole, right? So because of the fact that I'm from Malacca and Portuguese descent, the kind of food I cook is very mixed because of the intermarriage of the Portuguese and the Dutch. When the Portuguese came to Malacca way back in the 1500s, as you know, I think history says that, they intermarried the local people. And the Peranakans were already there, Chinese, the Indians, and the Malays. So the intermarriage took place, and therefore the cuisine came about because of this. They cooked, I guess each woman, each wife, would have cooked her kind of food for her Portuguese husband, if I think it that way, you know, and that's how it became so mixed. We've got Portuguese influence as well, which is British, Portuguese, Western kind of food, and also the local flavours. If it is Peranakan, a lot of dishes are like pongte, chap chai, chun chun, keluak curry, which already is a Peranakan cuisine. But we came about, so we also had the influence from them. They married the Portuguese, they cooked their kind of food. The Indians cooked their Indian curries, and and the Chinese, we have soups and vegetables and noodles and whatnot. And then the British, the Western kind of food would have been stews, cutlets, you know, food like that. So Kristang food, if I were to describe it, would be really this: a mixture of different races cooking their kind of cuisine to make it Kristang cuisine.
Mm.
Yeah.
And What are the main differences then between like Kristang cuisine and the more Baba Nyonya?
Okay, I would go more for the similarities because in Peranakan cuisine, in Malay cuisine, there's always rempah, right? It's a paste or something. So I would say similarities because we use the same ingredients like shallots, a lot of lemongrass, galangal, you know, things like that, dried chilies. So I guess our cuisine, you know, it's similar to one another, to the Indian type of food, because Indians use a lot of spices. And in certain curries that we cook also, we use a lot of spices. And then we've got the Malay. Malays cook a lot of sambals. And we've got many types of sambals also in our kind of cuisine. We have what we call sambal binagre, which is vinegar-based. Another one would be tambrino. This is in Papia Kristang. So tambrino would mean tamarind. So there's a lot of influence from these different races. So, like, I give you a little story. My mom always said, we cook a curry captain. It's different from kapitan.
Right.
A lot of people, I love curry captain, and they order that, you know. And then I go and tell them, no, it's actually captain. It's a sweet curry. And my mom's story is that this particular wife would have cooked this type of curry. Maybe she would have been Malay or something. And her Portuguese husband would have probably loved this curry, and he being a captain, so she named it Curry Captain. This is my mom's story. Yeah?
Right.
So we never know. So the influence of the different flavors and all that come from the different races that intermarried the Portuguese.
Mm.
That is how I would describe it.
And for you personally, have you been cooking since you were like a little kid?
Yes. I grew up, I'm the youngest in the family, so I was always with my mother. I thank God for my mom because I've taken after her, actually. I'm a lot like her. She's a people person. She cooked all her life. She fed people all her life, you know. She was a happy person, always cooking and feeding people. So I learned... I won't say I learned. Cooking, you can't really, I don't know, for me, I don't think you can learn how to cook. It's an interest. It's a passion. You know, you like what you do, and that's me. I really stuck to her, and I learned a lot, and I was with her to see how she actually cooked and fed us, and I had so many favorites, you know, that are still today my favorite.
And clearly you have like a passion and interest for food because you started cooking for people at your restaurants at Simply Mel's.
Yes, when I was 58. Yes, I was. Because my three girls wanted to make my dream come true. I always had this dream that I would own a little cafe, you know, just to feed a few people. But then my daughters, and one of them especially, came up with this idea of a restaurant. And I was happy. And even though I'm not a business person, I went into it because she handled the business while I handled the kitchen.
So you could do what you love.
Right. Yeah. And it was like onions and chilies that I focused on, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, that was fun.
And then recently as well, you then moved on to Melba at the Mansion, at the Majestic.
That's right.
In Melaka.
Yes, because in 2016, we decided to close the restaurant because my daughter and son-in-law migrated. So we decided, being a family business, we better close it because I couldn't handle the money part. I could do onions and chilies, as I said. So we decided, no, we will not go on with that. And YTL had already offered me an opportunity. It was a great opportunity to go to Malacca and be Melba at the Mansion in the Majestic Hotel there. And I was, of course, it was an honor for me because they only have one restaurant. And imagine my cuisine being served there was like the greatest thing ever for me because it's my dream to also keep the Kristang cuisine going alive, you know. And what better way than an opportunity given by them? And I was so happy really being there 2 years to promote my Kristang food. And until today, Kristang food is still being served at the Majestic.
I actually went there quite recently. I think this was after you left though.
Yep.
But yeah, they were still serving Kristang food.
Yes,
and it was all really, really good.
Yeah, thank you.
And I was just wondering, was the food that you served at same females and at the mansion, were they very different?
No. You see, because my focus, as I said, is only on Malacca, Portuguese, Kristang food.
Yeah.
Right. So when we opened the restaurant, the focus had to be only my kind of food. I would not compromise and have, like, you know, other people's cuisine coming in and all. No, it was just me, my kind of dishes. So it was strictly Malacca Portuguese Kristang dishes, my family recipes. Because every Kristang family, every Eurasian family would have their own recipes. Okay, you might have someone coming in and saying, oh, how come your curry devil doesn't taste like my grandma's or my mom's, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but you can't compare because it's just different. Every family would have their own recipe. Name would be the same, but different. And I have given classes to many people for cooking curry devil, the debal curry. And 10 people can stand in front of me with the same ingredients with me standing there. And at the end of it, each one comes out differently. How do you explain that? You know? So it's not wrong. I tell them, don't worry, it's not wrong. It's just different. That's all.
Yeah, I feel like that's the same for a lot of our local cuisines, right? Because a lot of it is based on the philosophy of agar-agar almost.
Yes.
Yeah, so you do things, you season it. You put enough spices into your taste, right?
Yep.
To me, that's like really, really amazing. Like you can see all these different tastes and different cultural influences. But at the same time, it also makes it very hard to categorize it, right?
Yeah.
Let's say you can't really say, okay, this is a devil's curry.
Yep.
Because like you said, you can try so many different ones.
Correct.
And they all taste different.
Yeah.
So talk to me about some of the signature dishes that you serve at your restaurant and what makes them stand out?
Well, of course, the devil curry, which is we say in Kristang, debal, curry debal. Huh? And it's actually a curry that it came up like Christmas time. It's a Christmas curry dish that is served. And that we have so many leftovers at the end of the night. So, yeah, I guess, you know, they put it together and came up with this dish because it's got vinegar in it and keeps it nice, you know, after you keep food for a day or two, somehow or other it tastes different. Mm. So, curry devil was the main one in my restaurant. Then there was keluak curry, which many people could not find outside. Of course, you have many Beranakan Nyonya restaurants that serve this, but still not as many, you know, and because I came about, people used to come and look for keluak curry also. Yeah, and then I had my sambals, my laksa, which is my mom's specialty, the Malacca laksa. That was also something that was quite popular in my restaurant. Yeah,
mm.
And yeah, so that's and many. I can go on telling you many, but I won't.
No,
let me stop there.
Yeah, actually, the curry keluak that I had there, it was probably your recipe that they were serving at the mansion.
Yeah.
It was so different from any other curry keluak that I had.
Yes.
Because you put like the whole fruit in there.
Yes, okay. Just to explain that, actually, even though it's a Nyonya dish, the style that we, the Kristang people, cook, is different because the Nyonyas would take out whatever is inside the naan and then perhaps stuff it in again or mix it with something else and then stuff it in, or the meat is cooked with like pork or whatever, you know, it's a dish. But we, the Malacca Portuguese Kristang, we don't do that. We cook the nut, the whole nut. Of course, we have to break it up a little bit and then we cook it in a curry with our meat. So it can be chicken or pork, you know, and that is how we enjoy it. So when it's time to eat, we actually take the nut in our hand, use a little spoon or something and dig out what's inside, then mix it with your rice. And each keluak, every keluak will have a different taste. It's not like all keluak taste the same. So it's nicer if you take and eat it one by one.
Ah.
You know, then you know the taste. Oh, this one is bitter, or this one is not like that. And a lot of my guests, especially the Europeans and all, they say that the taste is like an olive, like an eating an olive. because they ask me how to describe the, how do you describe the taste? It's difficult. So they eat and they give me their feedback. You know, what did you think of it,
John? Oh, actually, now that you said it, yeah, I think it does taste like an olive, like it a does? Very funky olive.
Very earthy, you know.
Yeah, very earthy as well.
Yeah.
And I think like it's a really amazing ingredient because I've heard that it's actually, in its raw form, it's a poisonous fruit, right? And then...
Don't worry, I'm 66 and I'm still alive. I love kalwa and I still eat it, you know? Yeah, because there's a process that it goes through in Indonesia before it's sent out to other countries.
Ah.
So it's buried in ash, apparently, for many months and then it's sent out. So not to worry, it's safe to eat.
Yeah.
I can guarantee. But it's only whether to know if the nut is good or bad, that's all.
Yeah, and it was such a fun dish to have as well, with all the digging into the fruit itself. Yeah. And you actually get to taste the buah kalwa itself.
Yep.
I thought that was really, really cool. We are now going to take a really quick break. But when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Chef Melba and learn more about Kristang food. Stay with us. You're listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Breaking Bread. I'm Jun, and I've been speaking to Chef Melba Nunes, a proponent of Kristang food in Malaysia. Okay, so it seems that Kristang cuisine has a lot of influences from the Portuguese, right? Were there anything in particular that kind of changed their cuisine that made it stand out from, let's say, Nyonya Peranakan food?
Well, yes, I would say vinegar, because vinegar was used as a preservative, right, in the food. So some of our dishes that used vinegar would have been the sambal, or it still is sambal, the devil curry, the feng, which is a Christmas special dish cooked with innards, and also curry captain. Captain, instead of vinegar, we use lime.
Mm.
All right? And then other Kristang specialties, I would really say specifically Kristang, would be the semu dish. Semu is either cooked with beef or with ox tongue. And stew, which is also very, I would say, you know, European in that sense, Portuguese, because I cook a kind of stew not only with chicken, but with corned beef. So it's really different. You can find this more Kristang.
Just wondering, do you guys use like a lot of tamarind in your cooking as well?
For some dishes, of course, yes. There's lime, there's vinegar, and there's tamarind. So these are the ingredients that, of course, enhance the dishes, right? So again, because Kristang food, I grew up cooking this type of dishes, so I specifically know what require vinegar, what require lime, and what requires the tamarind.
Yeah, I think maybe the acid is what makes Kristang food so nice and tangy. And it makes it so moorish, because it always seems like acid is something that is not really thought of as important in cooking, especially in Asian cooking, I suppose. But I'm not sure. There's one recent book by Samin Nosrat, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. So she was saying how the four things, salt, fat, acid, and heat, are really important bases of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess in this case, the Kristang food got the acid bit like spot on.
Yes, spot on, yeah.
Cool. So, Melba, you've been the champion of Kristang cuisine in Malaysia for many, many years now. But I just want to find out, like, what have the challenges been in explaining Kristang food to people, to Malaysians especially, because I only knew about Kristang food in the past year and a half. Before that, all I knew was, I guess, the Baba Nyonya Peranakan food that came from Malacca. But there's also, like, Kristang also comes from Malacca. So what difficulties have you faced?
Well, when I opened my restaurant, we eat a lot of pork. Our dishes are a lot pork dishes. But because I wanted to share this cuisine with many out there, our restaurant was halal. You know, and so I substitute a lot of my dishes with beef, with chicken, and that's how I was able to share my kind of cuisine with many people. Because they come in like you, Jun, and say, "Hey, you know, what is Kristang food? I've never heard of it. Who are you? What is a Kristang person?" And then there I go, you know, able to explain myself and try to educate them and know a little bit about the Melaka Portuguese people and the food. So yes, I can say, I won't say it's been a challenge, because for me, I'm a people person. So it's been very interesting for me to actually talk to everyone about this. So it's really, I think many people have come to know about the Kristang food, not only locally, but internationally, because many of our guests, like when I was in the Majestic or even in my restaurant, many of them are foreigners, and they came to know about Melaka Portuguese Kristang food because of my cooking, my dishes. So I'm very happy about that, because I think a lot overseas now know about it. And I've been to like Chicago to guest chef in a restaurant there also to promote the Kristang food. Mm. That was last year. And in Macau as well. And so I'm trying to go places, and pretty soon I will be going to Napa Valley in California. I've been invited to by the CIA, Culinary Institute of America, to do an event with a group of other chefs promote Portuguese cuisine.
Right.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting for me, because I'm trying to do that internationally as well. Mm. And I think my book is selling pretty well as well, my cookbook. And hopefully I can guest chef more overseas from now on.
Mm. And actually, talking about the Portuguese influences in cuisine, I'm sure like Kristang food isn't the only one with Portuguese influences, right? Do you know much about other cuisines in other countries?
Yes, of course, because we're going as a team as well. And when I started Simply Melts, I took the opportunity to actually go to Portugal, to Macau, to Goa. These are the Portuguese-influenced countries that serve their kind of food. And so it's interesting to know that every place is different, even though there's the Portuguese there, but the way that the local people cook their dish will be different, because they go with what they have. The ingredients, the spices and so forth would be different. So that's something really interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I feel like right now we are seeing so many almost like cross-cultural cuisines. I would say fusion, but that's a word that comes with a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
There's, because as our cultures get more and more diverse, right? You even in Malaysia itself, you see so many kind of like creolization of cultures.
Yeah.
Like even Muslim Chinese food is becoming a thing now.
Yep.
And then in the US, you have Chinese American food, which looks totally different from the Chinese food from China.
True.
And I feel that as our world gets more mixed, right, do you think it's going to be very hard to stand out, especially when it comes to what you are trying to bring awareness to, Kristang?
Yes, that one I have to agree with you, because I'm very old-fashioned. I call myself old-fashioned because I still refuse to use all the modern gadgets that are around. I still like to do, I only have one blender to blend my rempas, my paste and whatnot. And then my simple wok, my simple pots and pans, and my method is very, very traditional. You know, you have to peel the shallots, you have to do the chili, everything. No going to the supermarket and buying powder or market to buy the grounded paste. No such thing. Because every curry, every dish for me has got an identity, you know, and you cannot substitute with grounded things and all when you've learned it from scratch, you know. And I teach my students, the people who are interested, the same thing. Please, if you want to substitute and cut short, just go and tapau food, or, you know, go to the supermarket and buy packets that are ready already. Because, I'm very traditional. So it's very interesting to cook from scratch. And that's how I try to keep the flavors as authentic and as real as I can remember it.
Mm.
Yeah.
So is it possible for Kristang food to be modernized, or is that like blasphemy?
No. No, I've been approached by a few chefs actually who are very modern, and they want to keep the Kristang food, but their presentation, and I say, fine, you can do that, but do not change the flavors, the ingredients. I'm all for that. In fact, when I was in Malacca Majestic, we do wine pairing, we do gin pairing, and my food is served, but differently presented. So it's very fine dining style, you know, but it's such a, for me, it's wow, you know, it's something so unique, so different that my old-fashioned kind of food serving in a plate at home can be done it in such a modern way.
Mm.
And my daughter, who loves cooking at as well, one of them, is very into that. And she can just take my food and then, you know, present it in a very different way. And it's so beautiful. So yes, I think it can be.
Mm.
Yeah.
But it's really important for the flavors to still
be
intact.
Yes, that one, right? I will not compromise. Mm. So whoever wants to do my kind of dish will have to actually go by my flavors. Yeah.
Mm. So apart from, like what you said, you were doing all these like gin pairing, wine pairings with your menus at the mansion. I heard you also did something special with Ruma or Atas restaurant.
I did. I was so thrilled, actually, very excited about that because Chef Tyson Gee from there, he had a dinner at my home. He came for one of my dinners at home and he was inspired by my Kristang food and decided to do something, you know, to modernize it in his own way. And it was very successful, I would say, two nights there. And I was very proud to see that, you know, my food was done in a very modern style. Yes. Mm,
so what kind of dishes did he modernize?
He did the seba, he did fish cutlet, and then crab stuffing, which is my number one seller. And the black squid sambal sotong and, you know, look, quite a few things, yeah.
Mm.
So it was really, really very nice, yeah.
Cool. So since Simply Mel's and since Melba at the Mansion, you're now mainly doing supper clubs at your home, right?
Yes, I was in Melaka for 2 years. During that time, my husband passed away. And it took me a little bit of time and adjustment and thoughts as to whether I wanted to continue there. It was beautiful being there, but I felt that I missed my home and that I would have more time now that my children are all overseas, my grandchildren. So doing something from home, I think I'm happier at my own time and all that, you know. And I love meeting people, as I said. So I meet such interesting people, different groups, with companies, families, people who bring their old grandmothers with them and all. And it's so fun to sit down and entertain people like this, you know, and to see them enjoying my food. So what you get is really a home experience. You get me part of the dinner package. You know, if you like hearing about what and how I cook and what I do, then yeah, I think Dine with Mel is the right place to come, you know, for your dinners. Yeah.
How often do you hold these supper clubs?
Well, since I started, I've been doing pretty well. So I get like 2 dinners a week and all, and I try to get in between takeaway orders as well. I've been asked to guest chef at homes and all, but I find that's a bit much for me since I'm just one person working.
Yeah, and it requires so much work, right? Like yeah, all the dishes and chopping, cutting, everything.
Well, I guess you need to be happy with what you do and you must love what you do. And that includes washing up. Some people just want to cook and then leave and run, you know? No such thing. So you must be prepared to start from scratch, peel onions, do everything, blend everything, wash, clean, make sure you're ready by 6 o'clock so that your guests look at you. You don't look like a like a Cinderella in the kitchen. Yeah, you know, so it's really fun for me because I enjoy it. Really enjoy it, and it's not like such a chore for me and I'm dreading it. No, I look forward to waking up in the morning and going to the market, and you know, so it makes me happy.
Yeah, I can tell just from the way you speak about it.
You
love it.
Yeah, thank you.
And do you see yourself doing this for the next couple of years, or do you have a different long-term plan?
No, I thank God for everything I have, you know, always. And I'm taking one day at a time. So thank God for my health because I am 66 already. So I don't know how long I can go.
No, must be all the Kristang food keeping you healthy.
Well, I don't know about that. But yes, I'm energetic enough at my age to still go on. So really, I can't say what my future plans are. But I'm taking it one day at a time. And hopefully to do more guest chef and promote my cuisine and all that in whatever way I can.
Mm.
Hopefully, I'll get good opportunities, yeah?
Mm. I also heard that you're doing something for Christmas that's upcoming.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, as I said, I'll be away in Napa Valley for this event that I'm doing. And after that, I'm taking a little holiday to spend time with my daughter in Pittsburgh. And when I come back in December, yes, full swing into suji cake, fruit cake, and some Christmas dinners. So for Christmas, the Kristang people have got different dishes. We've got dishes like the chicken macaroni pie, roasted chicken with baked beans and stuffing.
Chicken macaroni pie?
Yeah. And it's not those little tiny pies that you buy out. It's a whole pie that will feed a family of people of 8 or 10, yeah? And besides that, we have pheng. Pheng is a dish that is Indian influence, and it's cooked with innards, you know, like intestines, liver and all that. So it's really something different. And then we have got a dish called seba. Seba is with pig's ear and pork belly and all that. And it's kind of like braised barbecue style and served on a bit of salad. And of course, I will not leave out kari debal. That's a must. And beef seku or beef semu is also some of the dishes that we serve for Christmas.
Mm.
So when I come back, hopefully I will focus on Christmas dinners with these special dishes that will only be available Christmas time.
Mm.
And also, I hope to do some takeaways, like for fruitcake, suji cake, and then pies and roasted chicken and all. And just to add in my days, there were no turkeys. I don't know where the turkeys came from later on, but way back in the 50s, we only ate chicken on roasted chicken for Christmas.
Mm.
And that was really nice because my mom would do her own stuffing with baked beans and some mincemeat and all that and serve it as the main thing for Christmas.
Yeah, and personally, I prefer chicken over turkey anyway.
Really?
So,
okay,
yeah.
Of course, it's moist and, you know, it's not as dry. Yeah?
Mm, so if people want to, I guess, order some of your takeaways or even reserve a spot at one of your dinners,
yes.
Where can they find that?
I'm on Facebook, Instagram, so I think it'll
be there. Melbourne Nunes?
Chef Melbourne Nunes. And I think all information will be there.
Cool. And you can also probably find it in the show notes, which we'll put up soon. So thank you so much for coming into the show today, Chef Melba.
Thank you, Jun. I really enjoyed my time here.
Thank you. That's all we have for this week's show. To listen to more episodes, find us on iTunes, Spotify, or visit our website at www.bfm.my. And if you're hungry for recipes to try out this weekend or want to read some funky food writing, you can find those on my blog at junandtonic.com. That's junandtonic.com. I'm Jun, and you've been listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.